Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Trinity Sermons. This week, we are continuing our sermon series titled The S Word, where we dive into the seven deadly sins. And this week's sin is a little bit awkward to talk about, but also really important, and that is the sin of lust. And so join us as Rob talks to us more about what lust is, what it looks like in our lives, and most importantly, how we can move forward from shame into the freedom that Christ offers us.
Today's reading, Trinity, comes from the book of Genesis, chapter 39, verses 4 to 21. Joseph found favor in his eyes, that's Potiphar's eyes, and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. One day, he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had ran out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has brought to us, has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
So we're working through this teaching series on the seven deadly sins. And we've talked about pride, we've talked about envy, we've talked about sloth, we've talked about greed. We've been there, we've done that. You can watch them all on YouTube. And today we come to the deadly sin of lust. And therefore, there's probably like three different groups of people here who are in the church this morning. There's one group who is genuinely interested to hear and watch me squirm up here as the pastor tries to talk about lust. In fact, you've been waiting for this one. You've been rubbing your hands and you've been like, this is going to be good. There's another group of people here this morning, and those are you who are visiting or you're new here this morning, and right about now you're beginning to think you've made a horrible mistake And then there's a third group of people here, basically my own children, who right now are burying their head in their hands. They are just mortified that their dad is going to stand up in front of hundreds of people and talk about lust. They're going to be scarred for life. But listen, as Salt and Peppa said in the 90s, let's talk about sex. And, you know, there is, at the beginning of that song, I didn't realize, but they have this little exchange. They say, yo, I don't think we should talk about this. Come on, why not? Well, people might not understand what we're trying to say, you know, but that's part of life. Yes, that's actually true. It is part of life. And even though this is awkward, the very fact that it's awkward might be a sign that we need to talk about it more, not less, because not talking about it hasn't worked out that well either. And in fact, it was Howard Hendricks who said that we should not be ashamed to discuss what God was unashamed to create. And that's the thing. God made us this way. God made us this way. And so, of course, in your life, sex is going to show up. And of course, lust is going to show up. And sometimes when we least expect it, like a vacuum cleaner salesman who knocks on the door, you go there and he was uninvited and he was unexpected. And yet here he is. Lust has a habit of showing up often at the most unexpected times. And it's not just for guys. And it's not just for young people. And it's not just for Hollywood. It's for all of us. And it can happen in the midst of really good times. Or it can also happen when you're rock bottom in the middle of bad times. Now, for Joseph, Joseph's life was going along just great. He was at like the height of good times. He had found favor in his master's eyes. He was put in charge of his household. Joseph's life had finally turned a corner. He was finally getting somewhere. And then guess what? There was a knock on the door, and who was it? Oh, it was sex. It was lust. It showed up, and it was unexpected. It was uninvited. But when it shows up, you've got to figure out how to deal with it, because the way that you deal with it will actually either make you or break you. And so today, we're going to talk about sex, and we're going to talk about lust. And actually, I'm not going to do so much of the talking, but three other people are going to do most of the talking this morning, and that's going to be you and you. And you. No, the three people that are going to talk about it are going to listen first to Potiphar's wife, and she's going to talk about revealing what lust is. Then we're going to talk to Joseph, and Joseph is going to explain us how to deal with lust. And then Jesus is going to help us understand healing from lust. So there's the revealing of it, dealing with it, healing with it. Let's start with revealing. What is lust? Now, of course, the Bible even would say you can be lustful about lots of things. You can be lustful about power. You can be lustful about status. But when it comes to the seven deadly sins, I'm sorry to say, lust is speaking about that nitty-gritty thing called sex. It's like when Jesus says that to have even, you know, when you think of someone lustfully in your heart, you have committed adultery with them. That's the connection that we're talking about. So here is a good maybe definition of what lust is. Lust is the disordered desire for sexual pleasure that treats people as objects rather than persons. Now, notice what it does not say. It does not say that lust is sexual desire. It's a disordered desire. Lust takes something that is good and twists it and makes it destructive. So again, lust is not sexual desire itself. The Bible never says sex is wrong. The Bible never says that sexual desire is wrong. In fact, if you were to compare the Bible and Christianity to other religions, you would actually realize that it has a really, really high view of sex. In fact, in Genesis chapter 1, we read that God actually created sexuality. He created male and female. And when he had created male and female, he said it was very good. He was happy with what he had made. And in fact, he said, now go, be fruitful, multiply, go and do it, for lack of a better word. So God created it. And then in the New Testament, you got people like Paul who almost commands husbands and wives to be sexually into each other. He says, you know, is it good to have sexual relations? Certainly, Paul says. And then there is this book of the Bible called the Song of Solomon that's so graphic in its talk about sex that little Hebrew boys and girls weren't even allowed to read the book until they got older. Stuff like, kiss me, let the king bring me into his bedroom, you know. If you go home today and your kids are all of a sudden reading the Bible, really, they're really into the Bible, you might just want to check what exactly that they are reading. So it is really, really unfortunate if the primary message that Christianity gets across to people is that somehow sex is negative. It is not. It is not sinful, right? Sex was God's idea. He invented it. It's not wrong. And actually, when you do look at the list of the seven deadly sins, that's the reason why lust is never really at the top of the list. Pride, you know, envy, sloth, wrath, those things are unnatural. We weren't built to kill each other. We weren't built to steal from each other. We weren't built to hurt each other. But we were built for sex. So what does this mean? What does this mean? What is it about sexual desire that can go wrong and turn into lust? Well, the first thing that we see is that sexual desire becomes lust when that craving is absolutely out of control. Potiphar's wife, let's look at her, right? She was out of control. She wanted Joseph so badly, she threw caution to the wind. It didn't matter. She didn't matter that she was a married woman. It didn't matter this might destroy her marriage. It didn't matter that, you know, in that kind of culture, it could have destroyed her. It didn't matter that Joseph was saying, no, no, I don't want to do this. She was out of control. She was willing to take all those risks. And although we have so many jokes in our culture about sex, ha, 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 sex, out of control lust is no joking matter, right? It will destroy you. It will destroy everything. It will destroy your mind. It will destroy your heart. It will destroy your family life. It will destroy your marriage, your relationship, your reputation. Even in this story, it can make you violent when it's out of control. We are told it all just started when Potiphar's wife took notice of Joseph. See, it just says she took notice of him. You might say that doesn't seem fair, just taking notice of someone. That doesn't seem like that should be a sin. But you have to understand that in the Hebrew there, that word essentially means she cast her eyes on Joseph, which is way different than noticing. That is fixing your gaze on someone with desire and longing. Oh, look, he's well built and handsome, right? AKA, he's got a great body and he's got a great face to go along with it. She was focused on this. She could think of nothing else. The way to think of it is lust is not a passing glance. It is a practiced gaze. Or put another way, she didn't fall into lust. She fed into lust. And that's the thing about our culture. There are so many ways that we can feed into lust, whether it's internet pornography, whether it's OnlyFans, or maybe you're just watching Game of Thrones or something like that. It is absolutely everywhere you look. Here's a good example. I don't know if you guys watched the Oscars this year, but the best picture at the Oscars this year was a film by the name of Anora. I haven't seen it. It might be an amazing film that makes some really incredible points. But the point is, the story is about a young stripper from Brooklyn. The film is full of, you know, graphic nudity and sexuality. In fact, on the IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, under sex and nudity, it says severe. This is the best picture of the year. This is the Oscar-winning best picture of the year. It's the one that everybody needs to see, right? So it's where we cast our eyes either feeds into lust or leads out of lust, depending on what we do there, you know? So, you know, Thomas Aquinas said that lust is like a lion staring at a gazelle. All it can think about is its next meal. And Potiphar's wife was staring at Joseph. Joseph was her next meal. And as Tim Keller said, she had gone to bed with him so many times in her mind that finally she just had to go to bed with him in reality. She couldn't stop herself, right? Because lust is craving without control. Now, you might say, Rob, come on. Sex is a normal appetite. You're right, it is normal. It should be normal, but this is not normal. C.S. Lewis has this great way to imagine how out of control our appetites are. He says, imagine you went to visit this different, strange country. And when you got to the country, you went to a convenience store, and up on the top rack, you know where all the nudie mags are usually kept, where the little boys and girls can't see them, there were these magazines and the covers, and people would come in and they would take these magazines and they would take them home, and then at night they would unfold these amazing, high, glossy pictures of hot dogs and hamburgers, right? And then in the college dorm rooms, the guys are all putting these posters on their walls and they're running around from room to room staring at these posters of like spaghetti and lasagna steaming and dripping with cheese. And then people at night in the dark, they pull out their phones and they start scrolling through their phones where no one can see them. And they're looking at these high-res images of baked potato and steak. And then actually you can go to these little clubs, dimly lit clubs, where for a price, a girl will come over to you and slowly and seductively reveal a plate full of cake and pie. If you visited that country, you'd be like, something is not right here, right? What is going on? Yes, it's okay to enjoy food, but this is excessive. In fact, you'd probably say the people in this country must be starving, but they're not starving. They've actually got lots to eat. The problem is that the appetite is completely out of control. That's what love is. That's what lust is, pardon me. It is not craving. It is not craving sex. It's an out of control craving, out of control appetite for sex. Okay, that's the first thing about lust. The second thing you got to know about lust is that it is passion without a promise. Passion without a promise. You see, it is great to be passionate, but sex was meant to take place between two people who have made a promise to each other, and that promise is called marriage. Joseph knew that. Joseph knew that. Look, Potiphar's wife, she says, let's go to bed, Joseph. Let's do it. But look at what he says. My master's withheld nothing from me except you. Because why? Because you are his wife. And how could I do such a wicked thing? He says, we can't do this because you are his wife, aka we can't do this because you're not my wife. That's the problem. Joseph is saying, this is not a sin because it's sexual. This is a sin because we're not married. And the Old Testament and the New Testament are crystal clear. Sex is designed to take place in an exclusive, permanent commitment that is called marriage. You can't have the passion without that promise. Oh, Rob, I thought Trinity was relevant. I thought we were kind of a forward-looking, progressive kind of church. This sounds so old-fashioned. Even high schoolers today are talking about body counts. What's the big deal? Well, it's actually a really big deal. See, sex is supposed to be a way of creating a complete life unity between two people. The physical union is supposed to go along with the emotional union and the legal union and the social union and all those personal unions. They're all supposed to go together. Sex is a way of saying these two people have become one in every way, not just in one way. Not just in one way. And that's why Paul says this. Paul says, don't you realize that if a man joins himself to a prostitute, he becomes one body with her? The two are united into one. Sex is supposed to be a way of saying all the parts of my life are joined together with all the parts of your life, not just the physical part. Potiphar's wife, she just wanted the sex part. She didn't want the commitment part. She didn't want the ongoing relationship part. She didn't want the emotional part or the legal part or the social part or any of those parts. She says, just give me that part of you. Joseph says, I can't give you that part of me. I can't give you one part of me without giving you the whole of me. That is, in fact, the Christian view of sex. You can't rip one part off of the whole part. Sex, in the Christian view, holds together body and soul, body and spirit, body and emotion. It won't let you separate them. Potiphar's wife wants to rip one of those apart and just do that piece of it. And that actually, if you talk to somebody who has been involved in a lot of sex without commitment, that's how they feel. They feel ripped apart. You've ripped one part of this off of the rest of it. Again, C.S. Lewis, he has a great way of talking about this. He likes to talk about food, but he says, imagine someone who likes to chew food just to get the taste out of it, but then they spit it out. They don't want to actually ingest it. They don't want the food to actually go in and become part of them. They just want the pleasure of tasting it. Now, when that happens with food, you know what we call it? We call it a disorder. But is that okay then? Is it with sex? No, it is also a disorder when it comes to sex. Hookup culture is a disorder. You can't just separate the physical pleasure from the spiritual and the emotional and the legal even side of this. The passion and the promise have to go together. And that's the last thing to know about lust is it's not just craving without control. It's not just passion without a promise. It's also pleasure without the person, right? Lust is the opposite of love. Love says, I want you, the person, and the pleasure is optional. But lust says, I want pleasure, but the person, you, the person, are actually disposable. And that's exactly what you see happen with Potiphar's wife, right? When she realizes she can't get the pleasure that she wants, guess what? She says, I don't want the person either. She accuses him of something that's actually a capital offense. She's willing to send this guy off to his death because he wouldn't give her the pleasure she wanted. And when that happened, she didn't actually care about the person, Joseph. It was just what he could give her. And so, because he won't give it to her, he's going to discard him, right? So sin, this is what it does. It takes a really good thing, sexual pleasure, sexual desire, and it turns it into craving without control, it turns it into passion without a promise, and it turns it into pleasure without a person. Now, that's what we learn from Potiphar's wife. But what can we learn from Joseph? What can Joseph teach us about how we deal with lust when it shows up? Because it will show up. And he's going to essentially show us two things. That the way he deals with it is by, first, controlling his actions, and secondly, focusing his thoughts. First, what he does is he controls his actions. He does a couple really important things here in the heat of the moment to deal with lust when it came knocking at the door. The first thing he did is he just stayed away. He didn't just refuse to go to bed with her. He refused to even be near her. Right? Look at this, right? And though she spoke to Joseph day by day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Now, some people, again, will say, oh, Joseph, you're so weak. Come on, you're such a prude. How cowardly, right? You can't control yourself, you know? But no, Joseph is not being weak here. He is being wise here. He knew that proximity breeds vulnerability. In fact, it takes more courage for you to set some kind of boundary when it comes to sex than it is for you to tiptoe all over the boundaries to see how close you can get to the edge, you know, how long you can linger in the wrong place without caving in. And I think if we're honest, you know, are there places you're hanging out online or in person where your integrity is being eroded and when you are getting worn down? Joseph teaches us just stay away from those places. But it doesn't even work for him. He tries to stay away, but he can't. And so he has to do the next thing, which is run away. He left his cloak in her hand and he ran out of the house. When she made her move, Joseph didn't stick around to, let's talk about this. He didn't stick around and say, listen, let's pray about this. No, he just ran. And sometimes the most spiritual thing you can do in these situations is just run like crazy. You may only have a few nanoseconds to make this decision, but as Paul says, flee from sexual immorality. You know, don't overestimate your self-control. Oh, I can handle it. Can you? No. Instead, just run. Right. But it wasn't just Joseph's actions. It wasn't just that he stayed away. It wasn't just that he ran away. But also, Joseph had focused his thoughts on this matter, and that is also what saved him. It wasn't the momentary decision he made in the heat of the moment, but it was he had decided well ahead of time what he believed about lust, what he believed about sex, and what he believed about marriage. Joseph had clearly thought through the meaning of marriage. He knew what he thought about it, right? He says, how could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Why is Joseph bringing God into this, into sex? Because for Joseph, sex wasn't something that was casual. It was sacred. It was a God thing. My question to you is God part of your thinking about sex? Do you think it's sacred? You don't have to agree with Joseph, right? But you just need to know that for the past 2,000 years of church history, whether it's Orthodox or Protestant or Roman Catholic thinking, they have all understood, they've all agreed on this. Even Judaism and Hinduism and Islam, for centuries, these religions have disagreed on many, many things, but they all agree. Sexual intimacy is a God thing. that belongs in marriage. So like Joseph, you gotta bring God into your thinking about sex and marriage. And like Joseph, do it ahead of time, because the back seat of a steamed up car is not the place to think about what do I think about sex and what do I think about marriage. So Joseph had clearly thought through the meaning of marriage, but he also, or at least we also should consider the mystery of marriage. You see, lust says sex is purely physical, but the Bible says, no, actually, something deeper is happening, right? When two people become one flesh, there's a mystery going on. And the mystery is, it's about Christ and the church. What this means is, let me just explain, sex isn't just union between two people. It's actually a symbol of the intimacy and the love that God has for you. In fact, Ronald Rollheiser, he goes so far as to say sex is a sacrament. Just like we come to this table today, we're going to come to this table, communion, as a sacrament to remember and to relive and the reality of Christ's sacrifice. That's this sacrament. Sex within marriage is a sacrament that points us to the reality of God's covenant love for his people. We're called his bride in the Bible, right? So this is a love. This is a love that no spouse or no fantasy or no partner could ever match. So the point is that the lust is not just wrong. It's actually too small, right? It aims too low. Lust seeks this moment of pleasure when we were made for this eternal intimacy with God. And sex is meant to be a pointer, a sign, a reminder of that love. So, how do we deal with lust? Like Joseph, control our actions. And like Joseph, we focus our thoughts. You got to be ready to run when the time comes, but you also got to do some thinking now. But what is the meaning of marriage? What is the mystery of sex? Understand that before we get ourselves into hot water. But there's one more thing we just got to say before we end. And that is... Frankly, some of us are less like Joseph, and we're more like Potiphar's wife. We've let lust control us. We've suffered, and other people have suffered too as a result. And you may be sitting here, and you feel actually wounded or betrayed or dehumanized because of the lustful behavior that someone inflicted on you. So the question we have to end on is there any healing for this? Is there hope for people who are suffering from lust? And the answer is, of course there is. Jesus meets us not in our perfection, but in our sin. Especially he meets us in our sin. You know, in John chapter 8, a woman who was caught in the act of adultery was pulled before Jesus. And according to the law, she should have been stoned to death. But what does Jesus do? He looks at her and he says, "I don't condemn you. Go and sin no more." Only Jesus can say something like this, by the way. Only Jesus can, on the one hand, call sin a sin and then say, "But I don't condemn you for that sin." And why is that? Because Jesus himself was already condemned on the cross for all of your sins and all of my sins. So there is hope because Jesus meets us in these moments of struggle and sin. But there is also hope because your story's not over yet. If you looked at Jesus's family tree, you'd actually be shocked. It is filled with people who struggled, and in many cases struggled sexually. These are not people of perfection. They were shaped by lust over and over again. You got David, who lusted after Bathsheba. He's in the family tree. He slept with her. Then he covered it up by murdering her husband. And then Judah, he slept with a woman that was actually his daughter-in-law. And his daughter-in-law had actually pretended to be a prostitute so that she could sleep with her father-in-law. It was all so screwed up. Solomon took over for him so much that he had like something like 700 wives and 300 concubines. These are not side characters. These are the people through whom God brought Jesus into the world. He didn't skip over them. He wove them into the story. And you know what? Your story might be messy too, but it's not over. If you've fallen into lust, you're not disqualified from grace. You are exactly the kind of person that Jesus came to redeem. I'm going to end with a story about a guy who really struggled with lust, but found healing. His name was Augustine. And before he became one of the greatest theologians in Christian history, before he was a bishop, before he was Saint Augustine, he was just a young man struggling with lust. In his teenage years, he became sexually active. He had girlfriends, I think one girlfriend he had for a very long time, for years, but he refused to marry her. He eventually sent her away, and then he replaced her with somebody else that he could sleep with. He was longing for meaning. He was longing for love. He'll actually say he was longing for God, but he could not imagine living without the pleasures of lust. And once he even prayed this prayer. He said, "Lord, make me chaste, but not yet, not yet." Now that's an honest prayer, right? That's a deeply human prayer. But then came the moment that everything changed for him. One day he was in a garden in Milan and he was just grieving. He was weeping in the garden, so tormented by the weight of all this. And then he heard the voice of a child singing over and over again, "Take and read, take and read, take and read, take and read." Seemed weird, but then he realized this was actually God speaking to him. And so he ran inside and he opened up his Bible, "Take and read, take." He opened it up and the very place he flipped to was Romans chapter 13. And when he opened it up, it said this, it said, "Let us behave decently as in the daytime, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and debauchery, rather clothe yourself with the Lord Jesus Christ and do not think about how to gratify the sins of the flesh." And in that moment, Augustine would later write that a light flooded into his heart and all the darkness and doubt vanished away. Now, his temptations didn't vanish overnight, but something has changed. His desires had been reoriented. His heart had been captured not by lust, but by a greater love, the love of God in Jesus Christ. He would eventually write this. He would say, "God, you've made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you." So listen, wherever you are in this struggle, whether you're resisting like Joseph, whether you've fallen into a mess like Potiphar's wife, or whether you've lived years with this like Augustine, your story's not over. Lust doesn't have to win. There's grace for the broken. There's healing for the ashamed, and there's a new start for all of us as we turn to Jesus Christ. Thanks be to God. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Trinity Sermons. This sermon was recorded at Trinity Church Streetsville in Mississauga, Ontario on April 6th, 2025.